It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Your official station to talk Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Spent a little bit on the Giants, obviously, to start the show because Saquon Barkley was dominant in the second half of Thursday Night Football as they pulled away, the Philadelphia Eagles, that is, pulled away from the Washington Commanders 26-18 in a very close game up until a decisive decision from Dan Quinn to go for it on fourth down with about 7 minutes left. Instead of kicking a chip shot field goal that would have put the Commanders back on top by a point. And from that moment on, Saquon Barkley had two killer touchdowns on longer touchdown runs that sealed the deal for Philadelphia, who won 26-18 and have now taken command of the division at 8-2, two games up on the Commanders, as obviously the Giants and Cowboys have faded and are no longer a threat inside the NFC East. And the Eagles really stamped themselves as one of the better teams, if not the second-best team behind the Lions, in the NFC. But, of course, the story isn't that, not for New York Giant fans. The story is more misery and more embarrassment and, mockery. As Saquon Barkley, every time he has a good performance, especially in primetime, obviously, it leads to the Giants being mocked for their decision to let him go. And Micah Parsons has to come out and say something about how the Giants, were fools for letting him go. And it speaks so much about, they cared more about paying the quarterback and giving Daniel Jones the contract. You got the Eagles fans. See if we can find, I got to send you that clip. The Eagles fans chanting, "Thank you, Giants," in the Amazon post-game show. Sherman asking him the question, like, "Oh, what is it like to, go to a team that actually cares about you and values you and a fan base that's embraced you?" The fan base embraced Saquon Barkley for the New York Giants. They weren't good enough to be successful. This wouldn't have happened. It drives me nuts. Like I said, everyone who's complaining about Saquon Barkley gone are the same people mocking Joe Shane for saying the Giants are close. And I'm not even saying you're wrong for mocking him, but just think the logic through. You're mocking him for saying that they're close. What do you mean we're close? 2-8. Just lost to the Carolina Panthers. We're close? What are you talking about? That doesn't matter. How can you be close? They're not just a quarterback away. I'm tired of hearing this. The roster sucks. They're not a quarterback away. They're not a quarterback away. And then you'll cry about Saquon Barkley like you're a running back away. You're not. He was here. They lost with him. The Eagles have been good forever. The Eagles have been kicking the Giants' ass for 20-plus years. This didn't change the dynamics of the NFC East. And he's great, and he's talented, and he's on a roster now that can expose that, allow him to become that. The Giants were holding him back. That's why I didn't want to draft him from the beginning. I didn't think his entire contract would be that way. I didn't think the Giants could never get it right. But I thought where they were when they drafted him second overall that they weren't good enough. And that never changed. And that wasn't his fault, but it is what it is. And I'm just tired of having to have this conversation about Saquon Barkley. And oh my God, it's so embarrassing. Pat Leonard, who I respect, but I mean, I know how he has the view of this. Like, he's tweeting out the picture, the audio of the fans cheering, "Thank you, Giants." Yikes. What's yikes? What's yikes? Honestly. I mean, I understand why you think it's yikes. Yikes. I understand why it's going to be portrayed that way, and I understand why it seems a little embarrassing. You know what's embarrassing? 2-8. You know what's embarrassing? being in the same division with a team that takes Saquon Barkley and allows him to flourish, where people are actually saying he's an MVP candidate and going on and leading the league in touchdowns and whatever else he's doing, leading the league in rushing and going 8-2. And when you had him, you were just as bad as you are now at 2-8. That's embarrassing. Embarrassing is having the player and not having it matter. That's embarrassing. And it's been embarrassing for the last 5 years. I don't care what stupid Eagle fans are chanting. Hell, they know. I don't care. Thank you, Giants. The Giants offered him a contract earlier on, and he didn't want it. I don't care they're chanting, thank you, Giants. I don't care they're winning games. What's embarrassing is what's taking place with him. I just saw a tweet, too, that they had a rookie Saquon Barkley and an Odell Beckham still kind of in his prime. And they couldn't win or have a good offensive team with that group. That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Saquon Barkley doing it for the Eagles isn't embarrassing. Having that great player and it being meaningless, that was embarrassing. 2-8 is embarrassing. And 2-8 is such a big, shiny embarrassment that it blinds me to any other smaller embarrassments. So this is what happened at the end of the game. Obviously, he was the star of the game. After really, I don't want to say doing nothing, but he wasn't really having a tremendous game until the second half, but you have two breakaway touchdown runs that seal the deal. You become star of the game, especially when Jalen Hurts didn't really do much. The offense really didn't do much until those two touchdowns. The Washington did a good job. I mean, this is a 7-3 game Washington at the half. This is a game that's 10-3 at one point in the third quarter. 10-6 after the third, after three. The Eagles scored 20 points in the fourth quarter. So this is a game where they really weren't doing much offensively until the two breakout runs. So Saquon Barkley's player of the game. He goes out to the Amazon set. And this is what happens. This is how the fan base of the Philadelphia Eagles serenaded Saquon Barkley.
Oh, that feels amazing. It feels amazing. Last year, it was, you know, tough year for me mentally. You did a really good job of...
We love the Cowboys.
I'm going to talk to you for a second. I'm going to let the crowd take this one. You guys listen at home. They are saying,
thank you, Giants.
They have to play into it. They can't. Of course, the broadcast has to play into it. The question was leading. That's why you got the thank you, Giants, because the question was leading. The question was about, oh, it must be nice to go to a team inside the division that cares about you and a fan base that cares about you. That's why you get thank you. Oh, let's just stop a second. Let's do more interviews about the phone call you had with Joe Shane. Let's do more. Oh, I just can't believe they let him go. Can't believe they let him go. Can't believe they let him go. I'm sorry, is there anyone at Baltimore Raven games screaming, thank you, Titans? Because Derrick Henry is having an incredible year with the Baltimore Ravens. Anybody at Carolina Panther games going, you know, or 49er games, excuse me, going, thank you, Panthers? Because Christian McCaffrey is, when healthy, as dynamic a running back in the sport? No? Running backs on losing teams aren't worth anything. Henry's an incredible back. They've had some winning seasons. What'd they win, though? They had an incredible head coach, right? They have Vrabel, great head coach. They had a pretty good defense. They had a defense that stopped the run. You know that because we saw how Bowen was regarded in the Giant Hard Knocks. So they had a defense that stopped the run, coached by Mike Vrabel, who's widely considered one of the best head coaches in the league. They had an offense with Derrick Henry leading it, not the quarterback, but Derrick Henry being the star running back. How'd they do? They finished with the one seed in the AFC. How'd they do in the postseason? Running back-led teams don't win. Plain and simple. They don't win. It's not the 1950s. It's not Jim Brown. Times have changed. Barry Sanders didn't win at all. Adrian Peterson, not a sniff. Derrick Henry, nothing. When your running back is your best player, you don't win. And the Giants aren't going to be in a position where their running back wasn't their best player for the next couple of years. So you know what? Why pay him? Why pay for his 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th season, 30-year season, when he's already had a devastating knee injury and he's good for a high ankle sprain once a year? It didn't make sense. The Giants did the right thing, no matter how embarrassing it may look right now. 888-808-1019. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Well, I missed you this week. Hopefully everything's okay with you, my friend. All I can say is...
What'd you miss? I've been working. I've just been early. I'm here. Everything's great.
I haven't seen you. I haven't heard from you.
I know. Keith went on vacation, so I've been filling in for Keith.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yep. Damn, I got to listen to you there.
I spoke to Jerry Seinfeld. You're unaware of this?
Jerry?
That's right. Jerry Seinfeld called in.
No, he didn't.
Yes,
when
he
you
did.
Were hosting?
Absolutely. No. Yeah.
And what did he say to you?
He wanted me to talk about the fifth inning of the World Series and literally...
Tell me about the pain of the fifth inning. Tell me about that.
A day hasn't gone by yet that I haven't thought about it for a little bit. In the moment...
It makes me feel so good to hear that. I can't tell you.
And I'm glad I'm pleasing you, Jerry. In the moment...
Yeah,
in the moment,
pain is my pleasure.
That's... Well, thank you very much.
I want to hear your pain.
He wanted my pain.
Wow. I thought maybe you'd ask him about the chocolate vodka, but I love it.
It started about Seinfeld. That's why he called in. I made a joke about Seinfeld, and Paul, the producer, said, oh, there's only a couple of good Seinfeld episodes, and we got into it for 5 minutes, and then Jerry called in. But yes, he called in about that, and then quickly transitioned into wanted to hear a Yankee fan cry, so...
Well, he must have. Yeah, I could see him enjoying that ball. You know, Triple V. I guess Triple V pulled
That's
it off.
It.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. So listen. It's painful to watch my running back. But the truth is, even if he was here, do you think we'd have one more win?
Yeah, maybe.
Think about it. How many?
Maybe one more win. Maybe.
Maybe even
two more wins. I don't know. Maybe let's get nuts. Maybe two more wins, but they're not a winning team, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, but of all the teams you had to go to, is that? I mean, that's what killed me.
Of all
the
bars in all the world, but he went to where he went. I mean, I don't know what to tell. Like, and again, it doesn't really bother me if he was doing this. I know it's for the Eagles, but like if he was doing this just at any team, like if he went to the Green Bay Packers with Love, every time they were in prime time and he did this, we'd be hearing the same stuff. I know it's the Eagles, but
yeah.
Do I view it as there has been one? This has been a one way street for 20 years. It has been the Eagles' foot to the Giants.
Never beat them.
It's been the Eagles' foot to the Giants' ass since friggin' 2001, man. That's how long it's been. So like I don't know why it bothers anybody.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, and you really quick on the Yanks. I mean, I know we're not going to hear anything till later on after the meetings, but are we looking for a first baseman? Are we going to focus on Soto first and then the other pieces? What do you think?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. And thank you for the call, Maury. You nailed it. I 100%. Well, right now, yeah, they're on Juan Soto watch. There is no doubt. I think the Yankees desperately want to keep Juan Soto. I think they're going to try desperately. I think there are other teams who desperately want him too. But until Juan Soto is done, I don't think much is going to happen in Major League Baseball, let alone with the Yankees. Like, I think everyone's waiting. And I spoke to John Morosi the other day about this, and he believes the same thing I believe, that everyone's waiting for that number to post, and then they're going to react off of it. So he expects Juan Soto to go first, whether that's in the next few weeks, whether that's at the winter meetings in the second week of December, whenever that's going to be. I don't think that until that happens, I don't think you're going to see anything else. So first and foremost, the Yankees are playing the Juan Soto game, and then once they either win or lose that, they will make adjustments. But for me, until Juan Soto is not a Yankee, I am going to go forth with the plan that Juan Soto is a Yankee. You could ask me, and we'll do it. I mean, but when you ask me what I think he's going to be a Yankee. And then the second thing, I want first base taken care of. I appreciate Ben Rice. I don't think he can't be your first baseman. I don't want him to be. I think the defense is so important at first base, whether it's that play with Rizzo and Cole in my mind, or whether it's just the way Rizzo played down the stretch, or knowing that they could have Jazz at third and he's not a natural third baseman, and I want a good first baseman. Volpe's arm strength is the one issue he has. He's great with the glove. He's actually really great with the range. Arm a little light. Want to make sure I have someone who's a good defender. So if you ask me right now, knowing the limits on what they want to spend and keep it under $304 million, that final luxury tax threshold, I want Juan Soto, and then I want Walker. Those are my two guys. I want to seal up Soto and then first base. And I'll live with Jazz at third or Jazz at second and Youth at third or Journeyman at third or second or whatever the case may be. I'll live with Dominguez in the outfield with Soto, and I'll live with it. And then maybe small money, because I know they won't be at the top of the market given $12 to $15 million to a closer, but or maybe even more than that. We'll see what Tanner Scott gets. But you got to get another couple of arms via trade, something. I think if you sign Juan Soto, now Spencer Jones becomes available, you could go out and hit the trade market. Now, there's a couple guys with Chicago, whether it's Crochet in the rotation or whether it's maybe Luis Robert. I know there's already rumors about Moncada. That would be a light minor deal. But maybe you could trade Spencer Jones for someone like Luis Robert, and he could be in your outfield. There can be clever ways where you don't have to spend all that much money. But I want Soto, I want first base, and I probably want a good reliever that I can put in the back end of the bullpen, if not the closer. I'll let Weaver still do that. But that's about it. That's all I really expect. I don't think they're going to hit up as long as they get Soto. If they don't get Soto, then everything's on the table. Then I expect a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. Maybe not Burns necessarily, but I expect a someone who can pitch either right in front of, hopefully, or right behind Rodon. Then I expect that. Then I expect maybe a Tanner Scott or someone at that level in the back end of the bullpen. Then I expect first base and third base. Then I expect a bunch of different things. But if it's Juan Soto, give me Soto, give me Walker, give me a pretty damn good back end of the bullpen reliever. And I will be gladly satisfied with that offseason from the New York Yankees. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I agree with you on the point that Soto is the main focus.
I think that's pretty obvious. Yes,
they have to sign him. But if they're going to sign him, I would say they have other options out there, like a top of the guy for the rotation and some arms for the bullpen.
Yeah.
And, we could live with Dominguez out there. Wouldn't he be better off in center field?
He's played more center field, but I got to tell you, his defensive play has scared me wherever they put him now. It's not like, oh, yeah, no, he'll be great in center. I think it's just been completely thrown up in the air that we don't know what kind of defender he is now. Yes, he's more comfortable in center. I'd like him in center. But that doesn't mean I have faith in him to be a good defensive center fielder right now, not with what we saw. So I don't know.
We can't have Judge in center field.
I agree. I mean,
he would be better. He's better off in right field, but he's one of the best right fielders in the sport.
Yeah.
And, in left field.
Well, I mean, if they get Soto, I think it's Judge in left, Soto in right.
I would put Judge in right, Soto in left.
Yeah, I would.
He's a better right fielder.
I understand that, but he'll be a much better left fielder. I think the difference.
You mean because of the
especially in Yankee Stadium. Especially in Yankee Stadium, the amount of space,
amount of ground he would have to cover.
Yeah, and, the amount of ground you have to cover. I think you're right. He's clearly a better right fielder than Juan Soto, but he'll be the difference between Juan Soto to Judge in right as opposed to Juan Soto to Judge in left is a much bigger gap. Is a much bigger gap because of how much ground you have to cover. I mean, I don't know. Could you switch it around, play Judge and Wright when they go to Fenway and have that completely flexible? I don't know how Juan and Judge want to handle that, but I would be into that. That's fine. You know, whichever, depending on the outfield, they switch around left and right. What's the difference? But ultimately, I think they're just going to keep Soto in Wright, and I agree with you. Judge shouldn't be the center fielder. You can't have, if it happens, if you rotate the outfield a little bit, give this guy a break, give that guy a day, blah, blah, blah. You could put him in center field for a stretch. Someone goes down with a hamstring and it's 3 weeks and you got to play him in center, fine. But he cannot go into the season, you're starting center fielder with the ambition of playing 150 games in center. I don't like it. I don't like it. So we'll see. There's guys out there. You could just get the Bader's going to be out there. I was listening to John Boy put a team together. He's got Michael A. Taylor out there. Like, you know, there's some guys you could add as a fourth outfielder who are legitimately good center fielders that you can rotate with Dominguez or play over Dominguez if Dominguez doesn't show it to you in spring training. There's options. But it starts with Juan Soto. And for me, it's Juan Soto, then it's first base. I want first base settled. Either way. If Juan Soto doesn't come, I'm still addressing first base first, and then I'll figure out what I want. I think first base is important for this team. I want a good defensive and off. I want a good player at first base. And I do think it makes sense, too, with Christian Walker, because you sign him for a short-term deal. He's 34 years old. He's not going to take the 10-year deal that Soto's going to take. He's going to take a three or four-year deal of $22 million per. I think that probably gets it done. I think for sure 484 gets it done, or 488 absolutely gets it done. 366 might get it done. But you do that, and then you play him for those 3 years, and then at the end of those 3 years, then you transition one of Judge or Soto to first base. I don't think you do it right away. I would rather it be Judge, because I think he'd probably be more adept to it. So I would tell Judge, listen, you're going to play the outfield for another 3 years, and then you're going to transition to first base. And at that time, at the end of those 3 years, I think Stanton has three more years. So you get Walker off your books, Stanton off your books, and then you have the two of them as DH first base. And then you go out and improve your outfield. And if you don't trade Spencer Jones, now you have Dominguez, Spencer Jones, and you go out and buy another outfielder. And now you've got an outfield, you got a DH, you got a first base. And that's how you stay under payroll as well. You trust in the youth in some of those spots.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right. Bum, 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 bum. All right, 3:33, McMonagle here with you. About an hour and a half away from the warm-up show, finishing up our midnight ride for the week on this Football Friday. We'll take your calls here for a little bit, then we'll break, come back with Marco and Fleegs, and we'll do the picks for Week 11 in the league where they pay. Footpay. I'm telling you, the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Steve would create, when I worked with Steve Summers, there was some nervousness, especially, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, I don't think he will, working with Peter Bellotti, who is now the producer for Amy Lawrence and the overnight over at the network. Worked with him, with Steve. He's a little bit of nervous energy and a little ball there, Pete Bellotti. Love him to death, but Steve would want cues, he would point to you, right? You got to hit it on time, otherwise he'd be annoyed all night if you didn't get it right, but I dealt with that. I was fine with that. Everybody has the board op dream. When you're a board op running the board here at WFAN, you undoubtedly have a dream where something goes wrong. I used to always get it where I was locked outside the room and something, and I couldn't get to the board or whatever. Like, you always have that. You're going to mess something up. The most nervous I've ever been behind that board was the first time I worked with Mike. And when I first took the job, me and Monzo, it was January. So it was like playoff games. And that week, that Friday, hovering over the board, waiting to push the button for when he said, in the league where they pay, for pay. And I had to hit that, the most nervous I've ever been. My hand was shaking in case I hit the wrong button. I had to check it 100 times that I had the right thing loaded. It was the most nervous I've ever been in my life. More than hosting the first show. I don't know why. You grow up listening to these people. It's why I did it, you know? I was like, should I go to college? Nah, I like sports radio. Let's just go try and do that. I love listening to Mike and the Mad Dog. And you're hitting the button before you know it. All right, 888-808-1019. Let's take your calls, and we'll get to the picks in a few. Lorenzo in the truck. What's up, Lorenzo?
Hey, how you doing, boss? Thanks for taking my call. You know what? I listened to you when I came in. I didn't even watch the game, but I heard the other caller talking about Saquon Barkley and all that. Listen, I go through it almost every week talking to these people, and what you said is what I've been saying. Like, if he would have been like, they ask me, are you embarrassed? Are you mad because he left? No, I'm not. Good for him. He got his money, whatever.
Yeah.
But, I don't go that route, because if he would have been with us, and I agree. And somebody asked me that the other day. How many games more have we have won? Maybe two. Maybe two.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe two. So yeah. I want to applaud you for saying what you said, man, because everybody else, especially Philly fans, thinks that we gave him away. No, we didn't give him away. He was a free agent.
Yeah.
He went to Philly because it was money, and it was close, and he lived in Philadelphia. So, in Pennsylvania. So it worked out for him. Good for him.
Absolutely. And the Giants tried to sign him. The Giants, during the season that they went to the playoffs, they tried to sign him. They tried to extend him, and I think the numbers were somewhat close to what he ended up signing for. And that's not to say Saquon didn't want to stay with the Giants. I'm sure he did. He was having a good year. The Giants were winning. He expected a little bit more money. It didn't come to a deal. And then it felt they tagged him. And then the Giants had a miserable year. And they knew the roster. They came to their senses and recognized the roster isn't. And Joe Shane said it in the Hard Knocks episode, and I don't disagree with him. You don't pay a quarterback $40 million to hand it off to a $13 million running back. Like, I get that. He's the last thing of the whole thing, I believe. Like, the last line was, or at least of an episode, one of the final episodes, but I feel like it was one of the last things uttered in the entire show, was, it's the year of Daniel Jones. Like, and that's why it's a crappy year, because he's a crappy quarterback. Although a good dude who I respect and is tough as nails, but just not a quarterback, man. Not in this league. John and Wantaw, what's up, John? You're on the Fan.
Hey, Chris. I got a couple of reasons why Soto's never going to sign with the Yankees.
Okay.
And just give me a second here,
sure,
all right?
Go ahead.
First off, like, this is just one that's just out there as far as, like, you have your professional reporters, right, that report on the stories, right?
Right.
And then in Soto's case in particular, this is a little different from a lot of superstars. You got your street reporting, right? So you got guys that he's with all the time, the guys that he actually tells the truth with. The only two, I think the two teams that he wants to go to, even if they come close, is the Red Sox. The Red Sox and the Mets. The Red Sox, because of that Manny and Ortiz legacy. He's a Dominican ball player. He wants to go there, right? If they come close. Now,
those are two Dominican players who play for the Red Sox. That's true.
No, so. But they were important.
And I just saw him video. I'm just saying they were.
Right.
I mean, he was, and I just saw a video of him dancing with Pedro Martinez, who obviously also
Now the other one is, now you're the Yankees, right? So you go into a meeting with Juan Soto. Well, I don't know why, but you go into a meeting with Juan Soto, and you got the manager there, Aaron Boone, and then you got Brian Cashman, and two things here. First, if you're Juan Soto, you're talking to a lame duck manager. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next year. If the team flops, he's out of there, right?
I don't think that's okay.
And then the other one was, now you have the whole thing, like Stewart just called up. They don't even know, some Yankee fans don't even know where they want to put the guy. This guy wants to start his own legacy. He don't want to be known as the guy who hit a lot of homers because he was in front of Judge. These guys are very prideful when they're superstars.
Yeah, but what does it matter? I love Stu, and I respect Stu, but what the hell does his opinion have to do with
what Soto's going to say?
Who cares what Yankee fans think? They're not going to tell him that.
But Hal
Steinbrenner and Boone aren't going to say, "Hey, listen, we don't know what we're going to do with you."
If you go to a meeting and you got your whole life ahead of you, 14, 13 years with this team, what if you say to Hal, "Hey, listen, I love this guy. Why don't you sign him to a couple-year contract?"
But I think you just said the whole thing. He's going to be here for 12 years. There is no way in hell he's sticking with the same manager.
There's no way he could.
There's no way he could expect to stay with the same manager. He's
Chris,
been,
you know,
he's
you don't
been,
go
no,
to a meeting he's like been that bound, being a lame been, duck manager.
What, first of all, a lame duck manager doesn't bother me at all. In baseball, it's not like football where I'm not being recruited by a college and thinking this is going to be my guy playing his style of football for the next 4 years. Like baseball, you hit the ball, you run in the outfield, you catch the ball, you throw the ball. It's not like I want this guy to be my coach because I fit perfectly inside the West Coast offense. Like it doesn't matter. I guarantee you, if he likes Aaron Boone, fine. But I don't. And again, he's signing a 12 to 15 year contract somewhere in there. He knows he's going to have different managers, even if they win. Like that's part of it. He's been on multiple teams. I'm telling you right now, the idea that Aaron Boone is a lame duck manager, as you put it, has nothing to do with what Juan Soto is going to do. Like maybe he'll say, look, I'd love to sign. I love Booney. I'd love for him to get a contract. I suppose. I don't know, but I doubt it. And I certainly don't think that it's any sort of major issue. Now, the Red Sox thing, I told you, you know, there is video of him dancing with Pedro Martinez. I don't know if that's new video, old video, whatever. But, yeah, the Red Sox definitely have a legacy of Dominican players there. And there's been a thing that he wants to be the guy. And the Red Sox provide that, even with him endeavors. But I don't know. I don't think any of that is any reason to think he won't sign with the Yankees. I mean, I'd really be surprised if the lame duck manager and the idea that, you know, it's about legacy and that the Red Sox provide a better legacy than the New York Yankees do. How about the idea that the Boston Red Sox don't spend money anymore? How about the idea that the Boston Red Sox traded away Mookie Betts? How about the idea the Boston Red Sox have finished in last place like 3 of the last 6 seasons? How about that? How about that they don't win on a regular basis anymore? And they don't spend money anymore. And they let Bogarts go, and they traded away Mookie Betts. And the only thing they've done is signed Devers. They have a rotation of that actually ended up pitching well this year, but of a bunch of guys nobody knows. I mean, how about that? He could be the guy there? Okay, great. He wants to win. The Red Sox haven't proved they can win on a regular basis. You're going to say, oh, they've won championships more than the Yankees. Yeah, I understand. That's this latest regime isn't spending money. They got more of their money tied up in Liverpool soccer than they do the Boston Red Sox. And as of late, they haven't won. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
One.
Your official station to talk Yankees. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
I always forget.
Football Sunday, so good to me.
That time I wanted it to continue. Every once in a while it hits and I'm like, that's not terrible. And then other times it's like, turn this thing off. All right. Picks for an NFL Week 11. Last week, I went 2-3, I know that, so that puts me at 25-24, still one game over 500. Fleas, what did you do last week?
3-2.
3-2, so that puts you at 22-27. And Marco said he went 4-1.
I think.
He did.
Okay. Puts him I was going to say, I wasn't sure.
21-27-1. Okay. Oof. All right, hey.
Oof. Still climbing out of that hole.
Every journey. And me and Fleegs, despite my hedging aside, both of us hit the take-a-chance parlay.
Half a point.
Pittsburgh Cardinals Saints.
Half a point.
I like it. All right, well, you went 4-1 last week. We typically do it that way. Go ahead. You started up there, big boy.
All right, well, I'll take the one game that didn't work on my take a chance. Mm-hmm. I had the Texans who laid that egg. If they would have won that game, I would have won the take a chance on top of it too. But I think Houston's a little annoyed from that. And I think going to Dallas where they liken the in in state, if you will. And the fact that the Cowboys are just a flat-out mess. I mean, with the Micah Parsons, the Mike McCarthy, Cooper Rush, and Trey Lance, and Jerry Jones, they don't even know what's going on with the sun. Like, it's a disaster in Dallas. And I think the Texans are a little bit annoyed coming off that game. So I could see them getting refocused, and I could see them taking out a little frustration on Dallas. You're laying 7.5 on the road, which is always dangerous. But I do think that the Cowboys have not only kind of hit into the tank, but I think they want to spiral out of control, if that makes sense. I think they're kind of giving up on everybody, including their coaches and each other. So give me the Texans laying the 7.5 on the road. Vikings, same thing. They looked awful last week. They got a win, but they looked awful. Are they showing some signs of, hey, this team may not be as good as maybe they showed in beginning part of the season? Possibly. And they're on the road, laying points. All dangerous things. But they're playing the Titans. And I'm sorry, the Tennessee's a mess. They're just a flat-out mess.
And their quarterback is an issue.
Yeah, that's a total disaster.
I mean, against one of the more heavy-blitzing defenses in the league, against the guy who's brutal against the blitz.
And again, you're laying points on the road. All dangerous things.
Yeah.
It's 5.5, though. It's not 14. Give me the Vikings laying the 5.5 against the Titans on the road. The third one is the game that we're all kind of looking forward to. There's a couple games we're looking forward to, but this is the one because it's been going on for a while. Not the Ravens Steelers. We'll get to that later. But the Bills and the Chiefs.
Tees and picks. Look at you.
This is something that's important for more the Bills than it is the Chiefs. The Chiefs want to keep the dominance. They want to stay undefeated, I'm sure. But the Bills need to prove a point to themselves, which unfortunately doesn't really get proven, because even if you win this game at home, which I expect them to do, and I'm going to lay the 2.5 with the Bills, does it really make you feel better going into the playoffs if they face Kansas City and have to take them up? No. But I do think it's more important for the Bills, and I think Kansas City's been walking that tightrope all season. They're due to lay an egg, and that doesn't mean they're going to get blown out by 21, but I could see the Bills being a dominant home team, the crowd, and I could see Kansas City in the third quarter being like, look, we're good. It's okay. It's not a big deal if we lose this game, and I think they're confident in themselves. So I like the Bills. Not even laying a field goal. 2.5 at home with Buffalo.
Gotcha.
The Jets are a mess. The Jets are a flat-out mess.
Yeah, I've
and
heard
I
that.
Feel like I've picked them each and every week.
I know.
Looking for that turnaround. I don't know if it was hope. I don't know if it was true belief. I don't know what it was. And going back to Anthony Richardson makes me think that the Colts will be able to run wild on the Jets, because everybody has run wild on the Jets. But that logic is making me now take the Jets, laying the 3.5 at home. Because I feel like
they're
all
a roller coaster of emotion. I don't
all
know what
signs
to,
point to take the Colts.
Yeah.
Which is making me go the other way and take the Jets.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm looking at. Again, I feel like every week I'm trying to figure out what to do with the Jets.
Yeah.
And every time I feel good about them and I take them, they lose.
Yeah.
Every time I'm like, nah, there's no way. And then all of a sudden they have a good game.
You're like Gordon Ramsay right now. Like every time like one of the contestants steps up to like, it's like, that dish was deliciously awful. Get out of my face. Like, that's exactly what's going on right now.
Mike Tyson has taught us we're all going to die and we're going to be dust. So I'm going to give a shot. And I'm going to take the Jets laying the 3.5 against the Colts.
Okay. There's your four picks. All right, Fleeks.
All right, game number one. I know it's a big number, but we saw them come back on Sunday night. And I also saw Mac Jones and that Jaguars offense not be able to score, barely move the ball. They're horrible going into Detroit. I mean, this could be 18.5. And I mean, the Lions win games, and they usually cover. I know they didn't last week, but if what it takes for them to cover is Jared Goff throwing 5 picks and spotting a good team an 18-point lead, then I'll feel good taking them at home against a terrible football team that might be quitting on their coach and this season. Game number two, the Dolphins coming back home, laying a touchdown against the Raiders. I think the Raiders have been awful. I've been picking against them most of the year. The Dolphins, that was a good win on Monday night. They're still playing for a season. You know, we've talked all about the Jets and how, hey, the math kind of still works out for them. Dolphins sitting there at 3-6, all that stuff that was there for the Jets before they embarrassed themselves, that's on the table for the Dolphins. Two is healthy. The defense looked really good against a tough Rams team that had its weapons. So coming home against an awful team, give me the Dolphins. And the third game, I mean, look, we saw the Niners already beat up on the Seahawks in Seattle earlier this year. They've owned them for a few years. New coach for Seattle, doesn't matter. Kyle Shanahan knows how to beat this Seahawks team. And the best injured player from that game a few weeks ago, who's now healthy, is on the Niners' side. It's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
And I know we got burned by them last week. They did not cover that game against the Bucs. If Jake Moody could hit a field goal,
I know,
or if they could finish in the red zone, we would have won that game. So it was a cover for the Bucs, but the Niners were much closer on paper to blowing the Bucks out than you would have thought. I think that does happen for them this week. They're at home, staying home. You know, it's a short week, but they're staying. They didn't have to travel at all. Seahawks obviously do. And they've owned them in this matchup and beat them by double digits early this year. So right. Niners minus the 6.5. And I was prepared early in the week. If Flacco was starting, I would be picking the Jets here because it's typical Jets. Now the season doesn't matter. Everybody can say they're, you know, still playing for something. They're not. It's over. This would be the kind of game where they win, and it's more frustrating than satisfying. But what would be more embarrassing for where the Jets are than to lose to Anthony Richardson, a guy who can't throw the football? Now, we saw Russell Wilson in his first start for the Steelers. His only play was heave the ball deep and hope one of his receivers make a play. They did that. The Jets already got burned by that. Now you're facing a team that has that, plus Jonathan Taylor. I'm going to take the Colts. Maybe the Jets still win this game, but if they do, it'll be ugly, and the Colts will cover the 3.5.
All right. My first two games, I'm going to go with two of my favorite plays. These are just standard playing by the numbers and coaching staff. I'm taking the Steelers +3 at home against the Ravens. This is a Mike Tomlin spot for me. There's two teams that are very comfortable with themselves. You got Kyle Hamilton out for arguably the best safety in the game right now, out for the Ravens. They love to go deep. That's what the Steelers want to do. They want to run the ball a little bit, get those safeties to come up and go, and Russell Wilson throw the ball deep. You saw the game-winning touchdown to Mike Williams. That's how they like to play. These two teams know each other so well. This coach is so good at home getting 3 points. I'm going to wait and see because it's been 3 or 4. For this purpose, it's 3. But I'm going to wait until Sunday. I'm hoping I can get the hook by Sunday because it's been at 3.5 for at times this week, and I still think there's a chance it gets there. But I'm going to take the Steelers +3, and then I'm going to take Kansas City as a dog. Plain and simple. I'm taking Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City as a dog. I agree, in Buffalo, if not now, when? But I've said that countless times. And yeah, they won the game at different times, but never when it matters. And this, you could see the way the Kansas City team reacted when they won against Denver. I honestly think that the only thing left for this Kansas City team to do is to go undefeated. And I think it actually means something to them. And I think right now, they find ways to win. Hopkins is going to get more involved in this offense. They're going to find a way to win this game in Buffalo. They always do. I just, flat out, Steelers +3 at home. Kansas City is a dog anywhere, anytime. So give me Kansas City +2.5. And then I'm going to go Cincinnati +1.5 at the Chargers. I just think the Chargers are due for a bad performance defensively. And I just think this Cincy team on, you know, death's door after another disappointing close game loss. I just have a feeling the Cincinnati team's going to put up a bunch of points. I think Burrow is playing. If they were winning, Burrow would be in the conversation for MVP in this league right now. I think he's done an amazing job, having a great year. I think Cincinnati is going to put up points. So I'm getting them at +1.5. I'm getting them as a dog here. I know the defense is bad. They've been able to, they're susceptible to the run. Dobbins been running the football good. Obviously, Harbaugh, excellent head coach, has transformed this team. Quarterback playing a little bit better. But I just think Burrow right now in this offense is dynamic, coming off a brutal loss. And the idea that they desperately need this win to keep their hopes alive. I'm going to take Cincinnati +1.5. And then the same thing, Fleeks, I was with you too. Anthony Richards scares me. I know, listen, they can run the football, obviously, with Taylor. Even some of their wide receivers, they get down the field. And they have, like, I think Alec Pierce is, like, one of the top yards per catch wide receiver in the game so far this year, even though it's not a lot of receptions. He gets down the field. They have a lot of deep threats here. He's been inaccurate, but they still make plays down the field with Flacco, with Richardson. Plus, he adds the element of running, and you saw Kyler Murray rush for a couple touchdowns. I think it's an element of this that an offense that can give the Jets fits. And I'm tired of picking them, quite frankly. I've been picking the Jets and losing with them. I just... It's the hook. Give me the Colts +3.5. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.